Hello, and welcome to the Learning Made podcast, where we speak to subject matter experts in the fields of education, education technology, and workforce development to learn more about advances and issues in the industry from cradle to career. I'm your host, Shannon Gattins. Today, I'm excited to be joined by Dee Masiello, the Associate Dean of Academic Affairs at Northeastern University. Dee brings more than 25 years of experience in instructional design, academic operations, and online learning. She's deeply passionate about education innovation, especially when it comes to creating more accessible, flexible pathways for adult learners. In this episode, we're diving into what lifelong learning really looks like beyond traditional degrees. We'll talk about career pivots, second acts, alternative credentials, and why curiosity doesn't retire. Whether you're an adult learner yourself or someone supporting learners in transition, this conversation is for you. Thank you so much for joining me, Dee.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so excited to talk to you. So, you know, we've talked a couple of times, and one of the things that was really obvious early on is that you've been such a strong advocate for adult learning and alternative education models. What inspired that passion?
You know, honestly, it comes from watching what happens when someone realizes that it's not too late, right? I've seen people in 40s, 50s, even 70s, you know, light up when they discover that there's still the opportunity to do something new and start a new, whether it's start a new career or just reimagine their lives. And that's really powerful stuff to see. It's pretty cool. The truth is that the traditional college system wasn't really built with them in mind. And I think that's why a lot of them kind of gave up on that opportunity. So I've really always enjoyed and wanted to create spaces for these. And I know we're using, I think it's a new name, but sort of these non-traditional learners, if you will. So yeah, that's sort of what drives me.
Yeah, I love that. What are the biggest challenges? You mentioned that the college, system right now isn't always set up to support. Are there other challenges for adult learners trying to like upskill or change careers or just learn something new?
Absolutely. I mean, time is one of the biggest challenges because, as we know, adults have lots of competing priorities, whether it be their jobs, their families. When you are getting into 40s and 50s, you're starting to get into that sandwich generation where you've got, if you have children and then your parents. So, you know, really making time and space for it is super, super challenging. Then obviously money. Financial, because with all of those things I just mentioned, comes a lot of financial responsibility. And education, as we know, is not inexpensive in many places. Even more so is the mental hurdle, I find. You know, individuals, particularly as they get older, they are still carrying around any negative experiences they might have had with education. Every time I hear someone tell a story or talk about how a guidance counselor in high school once told them they weren't college material, you know, my eye starts to twitch. They think they're not smart enough. They're not cut out for it. And that's rarely true. The issue has always been they just didn't have the right kind of learning environments available to them back then. And then going back to what I mentioned, which was the traditional college experience isn't built for them, right? So they don't even know some of these other opportunities exist. So yeah, I think it's, again, time, money, insecurity, imposter syndrome, perhaps, and then just a lack of awareness in many cases.
Yeah, it resonates with me a lot. I mean, I was never a great traditional student and I made it through my undergrad. But I have to tell you, when I pushed myself to go for my graduate degree, even just studying things that were of interest to me made a huge difference. And who knew that that was even possible? So that resonates with me a lot. Some of these adult learners, they don't want or need another full degree, but they still might need new skills or want new skills. So what role do you see like certificates, boot camps, micro-credentialing play in this space?
Honestly, I think they're game changers if they're done well. I really do. And I know that's the challenge, right? It's figuring out how to do them well and what doing them well means. It allows individuals, if done well, to get a very targeted set of skills without spending years and tens of thousands, right? Because that's the other thing too. As we get older, we feel, hopefully, time is more valuable. And you often do have people say, well, if I go back and get my degree, I'll be X age when I finish. What I love about that, though, is I heard a, I don't remember where, but someone did say to that response, which is, how old will you be if you don't do it, right? You're still going to, those ages, that time's still going to go by. But again, the idea of having to kind of commit to that is, can be daunting. So if you give them the opportunity to obtain these skills, get these skills in short, focused ways that are complementary, that I think, again, that just opens up an entirely new pathway for so many people. But the importance is making sure that the program is credible and aligned with what employers actually want. And that is, if that's not, it's just a pretty PDF link on your file, right? So you really want to be mindful that if you are doing this, and again, sometimes you're doing it just for enrichment, and that's valuable too. But if you are doing it for your career, you know, investigate the school and make sure that they are aligned with employers and they understand, and do some research yourself. What are these skills? And we also know in many ways where some of the skills we could build on are.
So as you were talking, and I'm looking through my list of questions, I'm going to jump ahead and I'll come back to this train of thought. But one of the things that occurred to me, because what we're talking about, boot camp, certificates, micro-credentialing, they're primarily online. Do you find that there is a barrier to entry based on people's savvy and comfort around technology and doing things online? Have you seen that?
Yes. Thankfully, I do think it's changing. One, I think that the younger generation coming up, and of course, we have to remind ourselves that that infamous millennial generation, I mean, they're in their 40s, like that early wave are in their 40s now, but they are more comfortable with technology. So I think that is changing. I think for many people, it's just overwhelming, right? Because the other thing about higher ed, and I actually was just talking to a startup about this yesterday, is it's not just the learning that comes in that format, it's the whole process of becoming a student, right? And leveraging all the different technological, the softwares that are required, from applying to enrolling to, you know, networking sites to career support sites to then actually going into the course itself. And unfortunately, what we're seeing in higher ed, it's getting better, but a lot of times those systems don't talk to each other. So you're adding that complexity where it's like, well, wait a minute, where do I go to get this? And where do I go to get, rather than have that one seamless experience? You can look at it from the old traditional in-person experience when you had to go to a different office for everything, right? So you do have that. I think the goal is for institutions and for people. People to start small, right? Start with things that make them comfortable. Find a program that might be free that you can sign up for, and you can do a 2-week class and see if it's comfortable, right? See how you navigate it and what it feels like. Also, I think it's really valuable for schools, particularly with learners who might not be as tech comfortable, to ensure that they have access to peers who may have felt the mm-hmm. same way, but who have also managed to get over that hump. So yes, it can be. And then, you know, there are also things people saying, you know, the difference between we could do a totally different podcast.
Yes.
But the pros and cons, right? The con is, no, you're not necessarily sitting in a class with people and having that live interaction. But you're also taking class in your pajamas, you know, at night after you put the kids to bed, or you've gotten home after a long day and you don't have to go fight traffic, find parking and do that. So pros and cons. But again, I think trying small. Don't enroll in a 20-week certificate bang off the bat. There's plenty of them out there that are free that you can dip your toe in, so to speak.
Get your feet wet. Exactly.
Exactly.
I wanted to tell a story. I'll just be very brief, but my son was a freshman at University of Vermont this past year. And really, one of his biggest barriers was, how do I find my course materials? Which system do I need to log in for which? It really was such a barrier that he wasn't able to give his full attention to the coursework. So, yep. And he's 19 years old, and he's been using technology since he was born. So I can imagine how daunting it might be for somebody who doesn't even have a computer, but is using a phone or a tablet. So again, a whole new podcast. I think we could do a whole thing on this, but it's good suggestion to start small, something that's free or low investment to understand what your threshold is for this kind of learning, this kind of online learning. Before I move off of this, because I feel like this is the track we're taking. How do you think adult learning also supports like emotional well-being, identity shifts, personal reinvention? I mean, where do you see that play?
Oh, gosh. I think we are motivated by mastery. Daniel Pink talks about mastery, autonomy, and purpose. So as we become more masterful, as we learn more, we become more confident. And then that confidence increases our curiosity. And I am a huge proponent of curiosity. That's why when I think about lifelong learning or alternative credentials or learning in any way, shape, or form, it has to be approached. The mindset must be, this is about curiosity. And I think, unfortunately, that got lost, right? And in this drive to get a degree or get a credential, it is about curiosity because learning is scaffolded, right? So the more we learn, the more it opens up our eyes and enables us to look to other places and see connections. And that for me is so fulfilling. It builds confidence. It creates, again, a new worldview. It's exciting. It's challenging. We want to be challenged. So again, lifelong learning and that continual learning and that challenge, you're absolutely right. It doesn't just need to be about what job I get next, because one of the biggest markets that you're seeing, it's why a lot of these schools with their sort of evergreen retired programs are doing really well, because, you know, even when we retire, like, we still want to learn, we still want to do things, we still want to contribute to our communities and our societies. And that's really all part of that continuous learning. So I think it's huge. I think it is a huge component. When you go back and you're nervous and you get that first grade and it's a decent grade and you think, oh gosh, I did that. I did it. You know, or when you get your little badge that you can show on LinkedIn and you get all the congratulations from people and you're like, yeah, I know that stuff now.
Of course. So it's funny, you know, I don't know if it was the podcast intro or I remember we used to say learning from cradle to grave.
Yeah.
And we stopped saying grave because maybe it was morose or I don't know, sad, but it really is true. I mean, why not say that? It really does feel like we should embrace the idea of lifelong learning way beyond the career. I think you shared a story with me of someone in your life who successfully pursued like a second act. Do you remember that? And can you relay that example?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I've known a few folks, my sister-in-law, who was a single mother.
Yeah, that's right.
And she was able to get her medical assistant certification. So she was working in a doctor's office and she was, you know, circumstances were such that she could not commit to a traditional bachelor's degree. That was just what happened. And so she became a medical assistant and she was so incredibly competent that she was basically being used for most of the things that, you know, you'd use a nurse for in terms of the doctor's faith in her abilities. And she did that for a couple of decades. But as she got older, she thought to herself, I'm not entirely sure this is what I want to do. And what had happened was just the reputation. She was offered the opportunity to become an office manager for a few different doctor practices. And so she moved out of the clinical role into an administrative role where she had supervisory experience. She had budget experience. She had, you know, general organizational experience. And what was kind of neat was that she had enough, I guess you call it street cred, that the clinical staff like weren't saying, oh, here's some administrator who wouldn't know what it would be like to deal with an unruly patient. And she was competent enough and intelligent enough to do the rest of it. But there were parts of it that she felt this may be a little bit more than just experience, right? The difference between managing people formally versus managing people informally. And so that's the opportunity for someone to go back and look at a certificate on managing change or managing within a healthcare environment or, you know, those types of opportunities for her, because she wasn't going to go back and get her bachelor's degree. She was in her late 50s. That wasn't going to happen. And she didn't need to. And the wonderful thing was that place saw in her the basic skills and competencies, and then also were willing to work with her to help train her in those areas that she had that decency. So that's kind of a great experience, because what it is an example of someone really taking that alternative pathway And she even said to me, I'm making more money than I would have ever thought I would be able to make. There's that. And then there's also an organization that was willing to see beyond just the credential, to see the experience and the skills and recognize, hey, we can train her for what we need her to do. But a lot of that experience, you can't train.
No, that's right. And so it brings me to another question. You know, say your sister-in-law did go back and get that, you know, smaller, you know, certificate. Do you think that the employers are beginning to value like non-degree credentials more, you know, whether it is graduating from high school and taking an alternative path, maybe getting a certificate in project management or going into real estate or something like that. Even myself, I'm, you know, thinking of taking a course on, change management or something similar. Do they value that? And what do you think needs to change in the conversation so that employers do understand that value?
I do believe they are warming up to it. I think, again, speaking of change management, right, it's a significant cultural change, right? And I think in part, I think it's just simply because there is a cultural norm expectation, whether it is actually played out by the data and the results, that we all know what having a bachelor's degree means. And so using that as a level of measurement of someone's, it's easy. It's an easy thing to do, right? It makes the hiring process, quote unquote, easier, especially when you have big volumes, right? Big volumes of applications coming in. We can argue whether or not that is actually a good indicator of someone's skills. That's backing it downriver, where schools are now starting to actually build beyond just the theoretical knowledge they're teaching students in undergrad or even master's, trying to actually teach them like skills that they can call out. But right now, that still seems to them, to a lot of organizations, to be a simple way of judging. Now, that said, what we have to do to build trust institutions is to create more consistent ways to verify skills, just like a bachelor's degree does, just like, you know, bachelor's degree, we know with all the larger accrediting bodies, right? Essentially looking for the same, you know, what it means to earn 3 credits, what it means to meet learning outcomes for an undergrad versus a graduate. So there's that consistency. We have to work on that. Right. And that's the industry. And that's kind of tough because I do think that there are still schools that are resisting it, just like they resisted online 20 years ago. But I think more and more companies would love to be. I read a statistic somewhere. I think it was an EduVentures report. When asked if employers trusted non-credit certificates or something along the lines of non-credit certificates, something like 62% of companies that were surveyed said they'd never been approached by an institution to actually co-develop a certificate with them, and they would be open to it. Right. So what better to ensure that, have that company ensure that they're understanding where the skills are that they need and how they're being developed than partnering with them, right? So I think those are more things, more partnerships in this area that we have to do. And I think it's also good for the college because, I mean, hey, you know, we partnered with, I don't know, throw Amazon out there. We partnered with Amazon to develop this particular certificate. Well, it's helping Amazon employees, but other companies might go, oh, okay, well, Amazon thinks it's good. So why can't we do the same? So yeah, I think, you know, like any big change, you're going to have resistance for all different reasons, comfort in the way things are, but then you're going to have those few front runners who are willing to take the risks. And I think a lot of it has to do with ensuring that you're partnering with the people that you're trying to develop the skills to help them. So more partnerships.
At LearningMate, you know, we support institutions, we support publishers, we support enterprise level clients. And we see a lot around competency-based education so that the degree that you're getting in marketing or in English or in, finance allows you for real world experiences beyond the internship. The curriculum is based on competencies that are reflected. Nursing is another huge one moving much, much more towards competency-based education. So I think that there's a lot that can be done, you know, at the undergraduate and graduate level there too. So when you think about, we were talking about micro-credentials, alternative pathways, but what about the adult learner? let's just say even 25 and above, how do they and how could they enter a traditional university? Like, what kind of support would be needed? What does that look like? And what could the universities do better in that regard? So for those adult learners who are sure they can get credentialed, but they're like, no, I actually want to go back and get a full, you know, degree in something. And are those learners supported and how are they supported?
Most institutions are getting better at it, but that's where professional studies comes in, because the institutions themselves are, their entire structure, their entire model, financial and service model, is built around that full-time student. And so what does that mean? Well, you know, the expectation in many cases, if it's residential, that the students are on campus so that they can access resources relatively easily, even if they have to go to multiple different buildings. You know, they still, it's there for them. Timing, the career center being open until, you know, 5 o'clock isn't really helpful to individuals who are doing it. One of the things, making resources available online, late hours, on weekends, times where individuals can figure out how to fit it in. And another issue too, that I think is a bit of a challenge, is in many cases, not all, and certainly again, this is based upon the school's primary population, but you might have reasonably good advising staffs for the traditional student. The problem with that is often that those individuals may not have a ton of experience themselves, right? So their advising is emotional and supportive and definitely prescriptive. Take this course, don't take this course. What it's not always is strategic. Mm-hmm. And I think that have individuals who are peers of the people that they are evaluating, who have in fact had maybe similar experiences, say themselves or non-traditional students, or at least understand the unique components of these people who are coming from multiple backgrounds, multiple socioeconomic levels, and recognizing that for them, it's not just about telling them what classes they need to take, which is also important, trust me. But it's also sitting down and saying, okay, this is your background, this is your experience. And I think this builds into, if we could see more competency-based, if we could see more credit for prior work, for prior experience, because then you're saying to someone, all right, you already have all of this experience. That's great. Let's figure out what classes we can take out, and let's give you some classes that will enhance that, or that will build skills, or that will expand your portfolio. But again, that type of advising is very different than traditional four-year advising. You're still trying to help students figure out what they want to do with their lives when it's a four-year, but there's a lot of life in front of them. With this, it's kind of like looking what's behind them and then helping them figure out what to do with that. Making them feel like part of the community in any way that you can is huge. Community, no matter where, what age, what have you, is
great.
A significant component. I think even traditional students, we also need to start thinking about 4 years is a long time, even for a traditional student. And when you enter at 18 for a four-year degree, when you come out 4 years later, you know, there are industries that didn't exist when you started, or there are new skills and things. So one, keeping in mind that as a perspective, two, getting them in used to the idea that, I always say this to my MBA students, I'm like, how many of you are planning to get any, you know, go on after this to get any more education? And they look at me and I said, you know, like, what? This is it. That's what they told me. I said, well, guess what, kids? No, it isn't. Right? So get them used to that concept that learning isn't about achieving a credential. It's about building knowledge and then being prepared to go to the next at any level. And then giving them, you know, those rewards along the way. Like, you completed those four courses. You just earned a badge. You have a certain set of skills that you can now go out and talk about. If you're a 25-year-old or 30-year-old or 35-year-old who might want to change their job, but don't want to wait until 4 years when you're done. Right? So now you can go and say, I'm going to University of X. I just received this badge. These are the skills that I have. This is why you want to hire me, while they continue to complete.
I completely agree with all of what you're saying. I'm wondering, and I'm just going to be selfish for a second, for myself, you know, trying to decide where I might want to focus my next set of learning time, because it's limited. Where is there, or is there at all, a place for adult learners in multiple industries all over the place to go to seek advice on how to hone their career? I mean, sure, it could be talking to their supervisor at their job. It could be thinking personally how you want to enrich your life. But are there resources out there for adult learners that is similar to an advisor at a university that can provide some guidance?
You know, it's a great question. And I think it's an area that definitely could use more resources in there, because there is no sort of central clearinghouse. But I think, first of all, figuring out what it is that is of interest to you, right? And, you know, in some cases, you're doing a job and there is a glaring deficit in your skill set. Okay. And so that's a conversation that you have with your manager or your supervisor. And you say, I'd really like to build up on these skills. Is that something that you see would be valuable for me?
Mm-hmm.
And where might you request? Does our company have a school or a particular resource that they might like, that they might, you know, support in some way, shape, or form? It's a place to go, right? And then I think a lot of schools, if you are looking in alternative credentials, non-credit, at least in that area, they might be limited in resources, but they would be willing to talk with you about what they offer and whether or not, you know, that would fit into your plan. I think go on Coursera and just, or any of those, and just see what's out there. You don't necessarily have to take it from them, but it's one of those things, because there's probably courses and topics out there. I was on there the other day, and some of the topics were so niche, but so fascinating at the same time. And I would have never even thought of that. And that might give you an idea of it as well. So I think it's a bunch of places that you can go. But I think the most important thing is to know that no matter what you learn, it was never a mistake. So if you happen to take a course, and I don't know, or if you choose to take a course that might seem a little, I don't know, obscure, I guarantee you're going to learn something that is going to benefit
yes.
personally and professionally. I guarantee you. And that goes back to that curiosity. The more
I was just going to say that. Yes, I was just going to say that.
The more
yes.
we start connecting
yeah.
things.
Curiosity.
So never, yeah. ever, ever a bad idea.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And as you were saying, I just like curiosity.
Yeah.
So I know we're coming to time. You know, if someone is listening, thinking about maybe making a leap and starting a second act or going back to learn something, what would you say to them?
Just do it. There will always be at least a dozen reasons why it's not the right time. As I said earlier, that expression, which is, well, if I do that, then I'll be 35 when I finish. Well, you're still going to be 35. I'm still going to go by. Enjoy the process. Accept that you may not be perfect at it. And that I always say, if you were perfect at what you were learning, why are you taking the class? Right? I mean, I'm, again, another couple of students, don't even get me started with A's in every class. Because if you knew all that stuff before coming in here, why are you taking the class? Mm. So learning is, again, about, I guess the thing is, learning, particularly in the United States, is very much focused in on performance. Did I get an A? Did I get all the answers right on the quiz? Did I do all of those things? We should shift mindset, particularly when you're older, to learning being about mastery, right? And about asking questions, not answering the right questions and performing well, but about asking different questions and mastering something. And mastering is different things to different people. Doesn't mean you have to become a concert pianist tomorrow. It's just a question about getting really comfortable with something and always being comfortable to ask more questions. Ask questions about everything and don't feel ashamed about asking questions. That's how we learn. Yeah. And just do it, right? Start
yeah.
small.
Yeah.
Start small.
I love that. I really love that. So I want to thank you. I'll do a little bit of an outro, but I really did want to say thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. I think that clearly there is so much left for anyone interested in pursuing additional knowledge. There's lots of opportunities. There's lots of pathways. It doesn't need to look the same for every person.
Oh,
and I think the real theme is just stay curious. really, just stay curious. Yeah, I love that. So thanks so much for listening to this Learning Mate podcast. I hope today's conversation with DMS Cielo gave you some fresh insight into the power and possibility of lifelong learning for adult learners. If you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to follow, rate, and share it with a colleague or a friend who might find it valuable. And until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and stay curious. Thank you so much.